One of the rules, or one of the precepts or teachings for the monks, is what is called abstention from vikala bhojana. Vikala means untimely, bhojana means eating. So abstention from untimely food, abstention from untimely eating. Now, the popular interpretation in most Buddhist countries is that this means that the monk shouldn't eat after 12 o'clock. And in many Buddhist countries they don't, and they follow this quite strictly. Now the question arises, how does this work out in terms of lay life? What is the principle involved here in this particular rule, this particular provision, which could be applied in lay life in terms of lay life? Now it isn't just a matter of the lay person occasionally doing what the monk does. It's much more than that. If you look at the principle involved, we'll see that this is a quite simple example. It's simply that of moderation. So translating, as we may say, this monastic precept of not eating after 12 o'clock, which would be very difficult for the lay person, translating that into terms of lay life, we can say that it means observing a consistent moderation in diet. Now in the Buddhist East, it very often doesn't work out like this. In the Buddhist East, it's very often thought that if you're not a monk, well, you can do anything, practically. The monk has got to observe the rules. In this particular case, the monk mustn't eat after 12 o'clock, but the lay people, they can stuff themselves as much as they like. After all, they're not monks. So what is expected of them? It's enough if they give dana to the monks, if they make offerings to the monks. This tends to be, the approach tends to be the attitude in Buddhist countries, almost as though sometimes the whole practice of the religion was left to the monks, and the laity satisfied themselves, as it were, with supporting the monks and being Buddhists, as it were, by proxy, or being Buddhist, as it were, vicariously. Now we can say that dana is definitely one of the virtues, but it's no substitute for the other virtues. Now remember, there's an example, which I was told about some years ago, the example of King Thibaw of Burma. King Thibaw was the last king of Burma. He was a very devout Buddhist, and these little anecdotes were related to me by his son-in-law, who would have been king of Burma had Burma been a monarchy nowadays instead of a republic. He said in the old days, at King Thibaw's court, in King Thibaw's palace, all the Buddhist formalities were kept up very well indeed, and the king was so pious that he insisted that every day dana, that is food ceremonially served, should be offered to at least 100 monks in the palace. So my friend, the son-in-law of King Thibaw, told me that, as probably some of you know, the last days of the Burmese monarchy were rather overclouded by all sorts of palace intrigues, and King Thibaw became very suspicious, and he started having killed quite a large number of his close relations, afraid that they were trying to usurp the throne. And it's a matter of history that he had killed altogether about 300 of his relations. Only one or two were left, amongst them this particular son-in-law, who was designed to be his successor. So this son-in-law, Prince Lutterkin, he describes to me how every day at a certain period there would be executions in the palace grounds, and the executions were carried out in a rather painful sort of way. Apparently it was a traditional Burmese custom. King Thibaw sent to Antwerp, of all places, for beautiful red velvet bags, and the person who was to be executed was put into one of these red velvet bags, put in alive. The bag was tied up and he was trampled to death by elephants. This was the traditional mode of execution for members of the royal family. And at the same, a Burmese orchestra would be playing music at the same time. So this was going on. But every day the king would offer dana to the monks, because he was a very pious Buddhist. Now this is a very extreme example, but it shows the sort of thing which can happen, the sort of development which can take place, when the sort of assumption is that the layman's only duty, only function, is to offer dana to the monks, and he can do anything else. So we have, therefore, to counteract this, to safeguard against this, by translating the principles of Buddhism, the teachings of Buddhism, not just into monastic terms and leaving it at that, leaving Buddhism to the monks only to practice, but translating them also into lay terms, in terms of lay life. So therefore I say, with regard to this matter of food, the monk observes the precept of not eating after 12 o'clock, but the lay Buddhist, if he's sincere, observes a sort of unwritten precept of consistent moderation and simplicity in diet. Now another example. You all must have heard of the rainy season retreat. There's a rule that every year the monk, not the Western monk unfortunately, that goes into retreat for 4 whole months. Nobody bothers him. He can meditate, he can study, he can do whatever he likes. He's supposed to remain in one place, completely secluded. Now, this is a provision for the monk. Now, what about the lay person? How does it work out in terms of their life? I mean, if it's of some spiritual value, this 4 months retreat, there must be some principle involved in it which could be applied to lay life, which would be useful to the lay person. Now, quite obviously, the lay person isn't going to be able to make a 4 months retreat every year, however much they might like to. But what about a 1 week's retreat? The principle is the same. There's only the length of time which is different. Now some people have already done this. Some people have had what really amounts to a week's retreat up at Bidoff, a week's meditation course. So they're really doing, in a way, in principle, what the monk does, at least in Eastern countries, when he observes the 4 months retreat, the rainy season retreat. They've gone into retreat for a period, isolated themselves from all worldly concerns, shut out all worldly thoughts, and they've tried to lead, at least for that 1 week, a purely spiritual life. Of course, they eat and they drink in moderation, but apart from that, they're occupied entirely, exclusively with the things of the Dharma, the things of the spirit. One can go even further than that, not only a weekly retreat, but what about a sort of occasional retreat from unnecessary social activities? There are some people who would welcome that. Avoiding social life as much as possible. That is ordinary, meaningless, frivolous sort of social engagements. That is, if you're extrovert. You've got a natural introvert, well, you might be encouraged to go out and meet people a bit more. But if you're a natural extrovert, as more people seem to be, even in the Buddhist movement, well, cut down on your social life. Go into retreats, in a way, a bit more. Try to give a bit more time, a bit more energy, a bit more thought to spiritual things. Now these are very simple examples, these two which I have given. They're both on the ethical plane. But one can obviously go very, very much further. It's not only these simple ethical rules which have been translated, as you were, into terms of lay life. It's the whole body of Buddhism itself. It's all a Buddhist thought and Buddhist practice which has to be translated in this way. Now if this is done, if Buddhism is expressed in terms of lay life, if we have what the bishop calls a lay theology, then the result will be that the layman will be much more closely integrated into Buddhism. I've noticed in Eastern countries, especially in South East Asia, that lay Buddhists are very often, in a way, very loosely connected with Buddhism. As I've said, very often they think it's their chief duty, sometimes even their only duty, just to support the monks. The monks get on with religion, they get on with secular life, a sort of division of labour. But that isn't really good enough.